Monday, 30th May 1983. You've 41 years past service in the Lighthouse Board, George.
Yes, that's correct. I was 41 years and 7 months in the Lighthouse Service.
Now, could you differentiate between the various types of lighthouses?
Well, there's the land stations which are near towns, or and then there's the island. There were the island stations and then the rock stations. Island stations, the families were on them. All the families were on for except the 3 weeks holiday during the year. They were marooned on these islands all the time. And the rock stations, of course, there were various types of rocks, such as Johartha, Skerrybower, Bass Rock, and Bell Rock, and quite a few rocks stations. So I think that we had 12 rock stations, what we call rock stations.
Now, how many rock stations in your 41 years did you actually serve on?
Well, only two, Johartha and Skerrybower. But I was at three, because it was called a rock station or a relieving station. It was a big island, the island of Rona, 7 miles long, and the sea wasn't near the tower at all. But Johartha and Skerrybower, the sea was battering round the towers all the time.
Now, what is the precise location of Skerrybower?
Well, it's about 12 miles from Tiree, and about 3 hours steaming from Oban, where the relief boat was, the relief ship.
And when were you actually stationed on Skerrybower?
From 1948 to 1951, 3 years.
Can you describe the actual lighthouse?
Well, the tower is I'm not quite sure about the exact height of it. So I think it's 100 and over 150 feet high. To the top of the dome. I think it's 153 feet high to the top of the dome. And the tower is solid for 40 feet from the rock. I don't know how deep it is going at the base and the foundation. I think it's about 20 feet, the foundation. And every stone in that building weighs about a ton. And it's each stone is dovetailed into the next stone and right into the centre. It's no A lot of solid buildings. It's just a circumference of stone and then girt in between, you know. But this is solid right into the centre, till a keystone in the centre. And that's solid for 40 feet up. Then there's the door at 40 feet, and there's a gunmetal ladder going up the 40 feet you've got to climb up to get into the door.
I believe the walls at the foot are actually somewhere in the region of 19 feet
The
thick.
19 feet thick of the door, and then there's the storm doors, which are pulled in during stormy weather, and the doors are about 6 inches each plank, and it's about 6 inches thick. You're going to haul them in with a winch, and these storm doors are closed when the gale is threatening, heavy seas on. And there's another door inside that, about 8 feet inside that, another heavy door. And then there's another ordinary door inside that. There's three sets of doors at the entrance. And then the bottom compartment, there are two water tanks. They take about 2,000 gallons each.
For fresh water.
Fresh water, aye, fresh water. And the water comes ashore with the ship, you know, and hoisted up in firkins, in 7 gallon firkins, hoisted up by a winch. That was when I was there, but now it's pumped ashore by a hose from the ship, you know, and they put water in about once or twice a year.
Can you recall the layout of the living quarters, etc.?
Yeah, well, as I said, the first compartment after at the door is the water tanks. Two water tanks. The next compartment is where they have 10 tons of coal in the bunkers. And the next compartment is the storeroom where the food is kept. The next compartment is a workshop, a lathe and various tools there. Next is the kitchen or their living room. The next is a flight of bedroom, flat of bedrooms, two bedrooms. two bunks in each bedroom, and the next another the next flat is also two bedrooms, and the next flat again is the library, which was a magnificent room. It was the whole tower from the coal cellar. It was actually lined in oak, right up to the light room. Most of the stations are lined in pitch pine, but this was lined in beautiful oak and oak panelling. And then after the library, as they call it, was lined with books, leather-bound books, right in great big kidney-shaped oak table and beautiful chairs there. And of course, used as the office, you know, for the principal keeper, did his returns and all the rest of it there. And then after that, there was the gun room or the magazine, where they stored the ammunition for the fog signal gun. And then the light room. And the light room, the machine case, there were the machine for revolving the lens, which weighed about 5 tons. And there were this machine revolved the lens, and the machine was solid brass, which had to be polished every week. And beautiful brass, polished brass, and nobody ever saw these things, you know, except maybe the commissioners when they came around. No visitors there.
You were stationed there in 1945.
1945, yes.
And that was your first posting as a principal.
A principal keeper, yes, that's correct.
What were your reminiscences of the station, the lighthouse, at that time?
Well, I was after coming off Duharte, and I was quite used to the rocks, you know, that type of station. So, but there's really nothing very important about the reminiscences there. Really don't think of anything outstanding.
Say, on the subject of shipping at that time, can you recall the type of vessels?
Oh, the vessels, they were quite well out from us. In the days of sailing ships, of course, it was really a dangerous place, because if they were beating against the wind, and there were three wild reefs about 3 miles off. There was the Fresnel, who was called after a Frenchman who invented some type of lenses, and the Mackenzie, who was one of the engineers at the building of Skiddybore, one of the surveyors or something, and then the Stevenson, which of course the famous light, one of the famous lightest engineers. The three reefs are called, well, they were very, very dangerous reefs. You could just see them at low water, and that was one of the danger points. But I've never seen ships come in close to Skiddybore at all. But when I was there, the one instant the man on watch in the morning, he spotted a floating mine come in right down to close to the rock, and it anchored just about a quarter of a mile, or maybe 200 yards off the rock, off the tower. And when the mine anchors, of course, it becomes alive. When it was floating, of course, when it holds, it pulls the detonator, something to do with the mechanism of it. So it was swinging back and forth, almost coming to the rock. And we thought, oh, well, if that mine goes off, that's the end of it. And of course, I wirelessed the office, headquarters in Edinburgh, told them about this. So they sent a minesweeper out from Tobermory. There were some minesweepers still floating about there. And they went to Duharte instead of coming to Skiddybore, and said there was no mine there, and they turned back to Tobermory again. We were left with a mine there. And the office phoned radio to us that the ship was, we never saw it, of course, went 12 miles from us to Duharte. Some navigators aboard that boat. So then one morning there was a very heavy swell on, and the anchor must have given way, and we saw the mine floating away towards Tyrese, or where it went after that we never heard.
Thank goodness for that. How many keepers, George, were stationed at Skerryvore in your day?
Four keepers. There were three men on the rock and one man ashore. And every second month, the occasional keeper, the relieving keeper, came out, local man. He came out to make up the two men then went ashore to cover the reliefs like that.
And where was the actual relief station?
The relief station was at Erith then, but originally it was for Skerryvore was in Hynish. And when Duhartach was built, they took the keepers from Skerryvore to Erith. So there were two, the keepers from both rocks were in station and ashore at Erith.
And Duhartach is another lighthouse out from Colonsay.
Out from Colonsay, it's 12 miles from Iona.
Now, one commentator, I believe it was the foreman mason involved in the building of Skerryvore, described the landing on the rock as being like climbing up the side of a bottle.
Yes, I heard of that, but I think it was Sir Walter Scott actually that said that. But yes, it was. It could be, and there was a blowhole there as well. They sent a fountain of water right up into there, and of course they were drenched with this water, salt water coming in this blowhole. But that was they put a charge in that, and years afterwards, and of course the blowhole was still there when I was there, and you see fountains of water coming out of it, but nothing like what it was originally when they were building the tower.
Can you describe the actual landing process for supplies and men?
Well, there was a grating which was about 35 yards long out to a reef, and there were pillars going out from it to the rocks, grouted into the rocks.
This is a form of jetty?
Just a form of jetty, just a grating, just a form of jetty. And we put a derrick up on the end of it, and when the relief came in, the ship lay about a mile off never came near the rock at all because it was just a mass of reefs, you know. And the ship lay up about a mile off, and then the launch came in with a crew of about half a dozen men and the officer, the second mate usually, in charge. And then about a quarter of a mile off the grating, they dropped their kedge, their anchor, and they came in then, and then there were two ropes thrown to them then. The anchor rope was in the breast, called the breast rope, and then there was a rope from us on each the bow and the stern, and it was very, very poor holding ground. And there was a man on the anchor rope, well, there was a man on the three ropes, one of the crew was on the three ropes, and when the anchor man always had his hand on the rope, you know, and you'd hear him saying, "Anchor coming home, sir, anchor coming home, sir," and the engine man, he was on his knees beside the engine was ticking over, and the officer was in charge of watching when we was watching the boat come in towards the grating, you know. Then you'd hear him shouting, "Let go," and the two men let go of the two ropes from the grating, and the engineman was shot out and went back and picked up the anchor and reset it, and sometimes reset two or three times during the relief.
Is there not something of a permanent swell running in that vicinity?
Yes, on the west side of the rock is a permanent swell running there. There's one small landing there you can do in the west landing, they called it. You can, very fine day, you can make a relief there. If there was a swell on the east side where the grating, there was also a gully landing, which you get into the gully, but it had to be a very fine day to get into the gully. And there was a derrick there, a crane there that you could take everything out of the boat, but it had to be a very fine day to get into the gully.
Tell us something about the provisions in your day.
In my day, well, every man had an allowance, and we bought our own provisions, but every man, they were supposed to be victualled by the commissioners, but I think it was 7 and 6 pence a day, each man got 7 and 6 pence, and we clubbed that money together and bought our provisions, like that. But there was 3 months, commissioners put 3 months supply of what they called iron rations onto the rock, a bowl of flour and so many kists of bully beef, and I think that was about all they supplied, which wasn't taken. But if we used a tin of bully beef, we had to supply that tin of bully beef out of our own 7 and 6 pence. we used the flour because the flour would go bad, and we had to supply that. The commissioners put it in originally, but we had to keep it going for 7 and a tenner. And then, but oh, we kept quite a good food to ourselves.
Did the keepers receive an additional sum resembling danger money?
Oh, yes, yeah, we got, I think it was about £20 a year we got for rock allowance, they called it, over and above the 7 and 6 pence a day.
Can you recall in the past years the keepers ever receiving beer or whiskey allowance?
Oh, no, they got no whiskey, but they got, ever since before, when the rocks were started first, when the commissioner started the rocks first, the Bell Rock was the first, and then you had Skerry Board, and then you had it. There was a supply of beer allowed to each rock. Each man got a quart, was allowed a quart of beer a day, and then this was discontinued, and they give this beer to keep, for lack of extra, to keep them regular. And then in 1916, the deer was getting dearer and dearer, of course, and commissioners decided to stop the beer and increase the Epsom salts in the medicine chest, to double the Epsom salts in the medicine chest.
And did you ever hear of tensions building up amongst the men?
Oh, yes, very often tensions building up among the men. I never had any problem at all when I was there, but some of the keepers had. Remember one fellow, I think I can safely mention them now, but they're both dead anyway. Two first cousins from the Caithness area, and their grandfather left a croft to the youngest son, and these two first cousins were on the rock on Skerry Bore, and the principal keeper, he was an Orkney man. He wakened sometime during the night and he heard this scrimmage up in the light room. He went up and here these two first cousins were fighting about the croft that was left about 50 years before then. Started fighting about it, and one got transferred to Duard, and that kept it quiet.
Doubtless there were many occasions, night and day, when a tempest was raging outside. Now, what was it like to be actually in the tower itself?
You never thought anything about it at all. You knew the seas were hitting the tower, but you had great faith in the stability of the tower. You never gave you the slightest thought.
Was there a problem with communications to one another?
Not when I was there. Of course, the radio was there, you know, and we called up the shore station. I did it at 9 o'clock, 1 o'clock and 5 o'clock every day, unless there was a fault in the radio, which we were usually able to overcome.
And the noise of the sea itself, how was that affected?
Oh, it could be. And it never bothered. Well, I've seen it's receiving a message, and suddenly the message cutting out, the sea going right over the aerial. And the aerial was out the window and up the side of the tower. And the sea hitting that was about 50, 60 feet up. And the sea hitting it there and cutting out, you know. And then, of course, when the sea went off, you established communication again.
What pressure of water might be hitting the base of the tower?
Well, they took tests both there and at Duhartach. And in summer gales, the pressure was 3 tons to a square foot. And in winter gales, 6 tons to a square foot. So that is pretty hefty, you know. But of course, it was dispersed around the tower, you know. It didn't hit in one lump, you know.
Was there an actual sway in the tower itself?
Oh, yes, there was an actual sway in the tower. You couldn't feel it. You're standing on the middle of the floor, but when you went up to the grating, with your chest on the grating, you could feel the tower swinging away back from you. I don't know what distance, probably maybe 12 inches, maybe more, I don't know. But you could feel the sway of the tower when in a heavy gale of wind. Not the seas. When the sea struck it, it was terrific, you know. The whole tower trembled. And you'd think a giant got a hold of it and shook the whole thing up. But when there was a strong gale of wind, the tower swayed a lot.
I recall reading that, I think it possibly was Skerry Vore or Cape Wrath, but it was stated that the pendulum clock actually stopped.
Yes, that was on Skerry Vore. in Skiddy Ward. Yeah, it was a swing.
Is that a fairly common phenomenon?
Oh, yes, quite common. The pendulum clock stops quite often. Used to stop quite often with the wind. And they have no pendulum clocks there now, but they were there when I was there. Well, I wasn't seeing the clock stopping.
And were there things coming off the walls, for instance?
No, never. We never had anything on the walls anyway.
See. Now, we haven't mentioned the effect of fog. In your days on Skerry Vore in the mid-40s, there would not be a foghorn.
No foghorn, but it was an explosive fog signal station. We had tonite cartridges, a quarter of a pound in each cartridge. And there was a tubular, what we called a gun, going right up, but it was geared on the top of the dome. And it was really a galvanized tubes, you know. And there was an electric cable coming from the top, the two clips in the top. And this cable came right down into the balcony door. And you attached this quarter pound of tonite to it. Then you hoisted it back up. And there was a clock in the light room, which struck every 5 minutes. And every time the clock struck, you fired the charge. And that explosive charge could be heard sometimes at Heisker, 30 miles away. And sometimes the ship would be coming quite close to us and couldn't hear anything. Because the same thing with the foghorns. Sound is very difficult, you know, like that. You're never quite sure the way it goes.
Was this not something of a fire hazard?
No. I don't think so.
But have you ever heard of towering inferno-style lighthouse fires?
Well, the Skerry Vore went on fire after I left it. About 6 or 7 years after I left, Skerry Vore went on fire. But they don't know what caused that fire. There it was an electrical fault from the generator that supplied the... There was a 50-watt bulb in each room, and that was mainly for the radio. A little Stuart Turner engine, 5 horsepower or something. And it was in the balcony, in a porch in the balcony, to prevent fire, so it wouldn't go on fire. Petrol engine. What caused that fire this night in the Skerry Vore, they don't know. The man who was in watch in the light room, he saw smoke coming up under the, so he went away down, and there was a fire in the library. And of course, he alerted the other two fellows, and there were no fighting. There was only about two little fire extinguishers on the tower. And they had to get water up from the very bottom ladder in pails, and three men with pails trying to, and of course they couldn't fight it, and they fought the fire until they were finally had to go out of the tower altogether. And they were very fortunate. It was a fine night, and they were able to take refuge down among the reefs on the whole. Then there was about 1,000 rounds of tonite in the gun room in the magazine. That exploded, the detonators there, and exploded the whole thing. And the explosion went right out through the trap ladder into the light room and blew the lantern out. And it also did a rent about, I don't know, about 15 to 20 feet deep. That's all it did in the wall. And but of course the whole force of the explosion went right up in the light room. And the whole thing was wrecked, the whole... The floors in each flat was one big circular stone, about it would have been about 12 inches.